Welcome, everyone. I'm Meg.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to Post-Concert Depression.
We are here to discuss all things surrounding concerts, following bands, music, and anything else under the sun.
Join in for some undiscussed aspects of the music world while also laughing your butt off.
Let's do it. Okay, today we have Christian Burghart with us. Christian has had his hand in music since a young age and has only continued growing. He writes, produces, and engineers most of his content, all while dabbling with different sounds that keep his fans on their toes. Christian is always pumping out new hits and is his latest release, Already Gone. Welcome, Christian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hello. How are you doing today? I feel like I definitely missed what you just said.
I was asking you the same thing, but I'm doing fantastic. It's actually super hot here in LA today. I think it's about 80 degrees. So I'm kind of
I've been confused. Did you move there? Because you're from Portland, right?
Yeah. So I'm from Portland, but about 3 months ago, I moved down here just to kind of join the hustle and try to make some new connections and take my career to the next level, hopefully. So
Have you found that it's helped?
I've met some really cool people, and I'm also living with another artist who I actually did the song Already Gone with. So just the atmosphere down here and the energy down here is just, it's something totally different than what I'm used to in Portland. And just the overall acceptance of musicianship and like trying to do the artist thing down here. Everybody, you know, when you tell them you're an artist and what you're trying to do, there's a different level of like respect. As where this is my experience in Portland, but when you tell people that you're an artist, they're just like, you know, you get discredited immediately. They think you're just like some SoundCloud.
They don't take you seriously. Yeah.
Just like, oh, it's going down.
Do they really think you're a SoundCloud rapper?
I mean, I'm sure that's like the go-to. You know what I mean? But, no, here everybody is really supportive, and even the building I'm living in, there's, you know, three or four other artists, producers that I bump into all the time. And it's just a different vibe down here. And I've been loving it. I've been here about 3 months now.
Yeah.
And I actually just got back from Portland. I made the drive. I was down there for the holidays visiting my family. Mm-hmm. And going back there, it's just like, man, I can't believe that I have lived there for so long and endured the raininess and just the depressive nature of that place. Being here is just fantastic. So.
It's probably nice to be able to bounce ideas off of other artists too.
Yeah. You know what I mean? For a while I was living with my sister in Portland, and she was like my main person to bounce stuff off of, but she's my sister and she loves me and she's a little biased. So I can't.
She's always going to be supportive.
So it's like, yeah, everything I come up with, she's like, oh, this is dope. And it's like, I started to kind of lose.
Are you just saying that?
Exactly, yeah. But now I live with another guy who's gone through a lot of the same things that I have with a record deal and touring, and he's put out records, and he gives me the real, you know. He lets me know
that's good to have people in your circle who will tell you.
You can tell by his enthusiasm. Like when there's something that I come up with that's really good, you can tell he's super stoked, you know what I mean? Yeah. And when it's just tight, he's like, yeah, that's cool. Like that's enough for me to know if I'm on the right track. So having him around has been awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have people around you who can be truthful and honest and be like, no, I don't think this is good. Or, you know, really let you know if they like it or not.
Definitely. I mean, as a creative type, like you can easily just go down the rabbit hole and just keep making things. And you can hear something that you think is good and just end up running with it. And it turns out that it wasn't that great in the first place. So, you know.
Hey, I will say though, as long as you like it, I think that's all that matters.
Yeah. I wish that was true, but unfortunately most people haven't heard 90% of my catalog, which is probably utter trash. So yeah, we'll just leave
Did
that.
Did you just say under trash? We're here to hype you up and say that everyone should know your catalog.
Yeah, for real.
I'm saying that I take the top 10% best of my stuff, and that's the stuff you guys get to hear.
You know what I mean? You're saying, okay, gotcha. You said that. Okay, I was like, I thought you said people who listen put it in trash. I was like, what?
No, I'm just like, you know, the hundreds of demos that nobody ever hears, we're just gonna leave them in that folder on my desktop in the clutter, you know?
Yep. Well, you mentioned a little bit, like, well, I'd be interested to know, like, how did you get involved with music, or what pushed you to go after this as a career? And will you just take us through your journey? Because we do know you mentioned a little bit about your record label. We want to hear all the details. Give us the nitty gritty.
Oh God, here we go. Oh geez. like this is going to take forever. I'm going to have to find a way to summarize this.
Well, okay. So how did you get into music in the first place?
Yeah.
How about we start there? I feel like that's a good base.
I think probably like in the third or fourth grade, my mom decided that it would be good for me to be like to learn an instrument, right? And like in school, they're teaching, everybody gets to learn recorder at first for a little while, right? Did you guys have to do that too?
Oh yeah.
I feel like I learned violin in like fourth grade. Yeah.
Yes.
I also remember,
it was my jam.
I was like, okay at that. And my mom saw that I liked that. So she's like, you know, you should like pick up an instrument like trumpet or saxophone, and I'm going to put you in jazz band. She ended up buying me a saxophone and getting lessons. And I was in jazz band probably from like fourth grade to eighth grade. And that's really where I really like learned about music and music theory. I learned how to solo and just kind of do my own thing. That was the very beginning. But at a certain point, it was like saxophone wasn't that cool. It was way cooler to be able to like play an instrument and sing. And I remember like there's this talent show like my eighth grade year of middle school, where a bunch of my buddies, like they played a bunch of Green Day cover songs, and it was like mind blowing to me and everybody else in that school. Like it was so cool. It probably wasn't that good, but back then it was. and it just, that was the moment where I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick up a guitar and start learning how to play guitar, like in the eighth grade. And that set off a cascade of events that led to me singing worship in church, being a worship leader. And like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I started in like the Christian music realm, actually. I was in like some Christian punk bands in high school, and I really developed my chops like in the rock punk genre at first, playing electric guitar.
Do you have any of that out? I would love to listen to it.
we're just gonna keep that stuff tucked away.
Okay.
It was all part of the growing experience. But yeah, so I started like that. And then in high school, like in my later years, I was really into sports. Like I played football. And that kind of consumed me. So music got put on the back burner for years. And it wasn't until I went to college for football and got hurt really bad. I tore my hamstring and I got cut from the team. And I was on like crutches for like 6 months, and I had nothing to do. I was stuck in my dorm room. And that's when I was like, yeah, let's pick up the guitar and start screwing around again. And I ended up like getting some cheap recording equipment and started tracking demos. Then I got approached by this guy who wanted to manage me. And he really, you know, gave me the confidence and the finances to push my project to the next gear and get a producer and, you know, start putting together a band. Gosh, this story is so long-winded.
I think it's great.
So after that, I put together a band in Portland, and we started just hustling the scene, like just playing all the local bars, all the local venues. I had a couple residencies down there. Like I was playing like once or twice a week for a while. But you know, I developed a pretty decent following in Portland and had a thing going, but it never really went anywhere than that. And once again, things kind of fizzled out, and I was kind of like, it's time for me to move on and find some other career path, maybe finish my college degree, find a way to make money and make it in this world. So I kind of forgot about it for a while. But then like probably six months to a year after I had already kind of quit, this guy approaches me from New York, who had supposedly been referred to me from some other guy that I played with in a show in Portland. Gosh, what was his name? His name was Dan Reed. He was like in a really big 80s band. He was super popular. Uh-huh. But this dude, he worked for Sony and RCA Records. And do you guys know who Dr. Luke is?
Yes. Familiar
with him, right? He had relations with Dr. Luke, who I didn't even know who this was at the time. But anyway, he reached out to me and said, hey man, I like your stuff. I want to come down and see you play. Like I'm going to fly to Portland from New York and just to like see if you got it. And me like,
oh, that's like so nerve wracking.
But I was so like checked out at that point that I didn't really care that much. Like, all right, bro, if you want to, like, you know, I'll play you some songs. And and I didn't really know how big this was yet. Right. So I was just like, well, whatever. And it's probably good that I had that attitude because I didn't care. I was so relaxed when I played for him that it just all just came off so natural and so genuine. Mm-hmm. He loved it. And he was like, dude, do you know who Dr. Luke is? I kind of like pseudo work for this guy. And I want to fly you to Malibu to perform for him and see if he likes your stuff. And then what the gravity of the situation kind of fell on me right there. I was like, oh shit, this is, this is kind of big time.
This is really happening.
So then I went there and I played for Dr. Luke and all his producers and A&R staff at his place in Malibu, just by myself with an acoustic guitar. Probably the scariest performance I've ever given in my life. but I did it somehow.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And then I got my first big major record deal, and rest is kind of history after that.
How long were you with them?
Well, I signed when I was 24. Oh my God. It's so,
how old are you now?
I'm 32 now.
Okay. Wow. Almost 10 years ago.
I would have never guessed that.
I know. I thought you were, we're 28. So
you guys are too sweet. Thank you.
No, you're 29, Meg, right?
Yeah.
You're older
almost
than
almost 30. Can't think about it.
Yeah, I'm half Korean, so that might have something to do with it. You know what they say about Asians? We look young until we're like 60, and then all of a sudden just shrivel. They look like they're like 90, you know? But no, yeah, I'm okay with it. Like, I look like a little kid most of my life, so I feel like now things are kind of leveling out, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so you started with them when you were 24.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know like a little bit about, because you took a break from music for a couple years because what, like the label was dropping you or something, right? Like what happened there?
So basically, like, I recorded, well, they put me on writing trips for the first year of my time with them, where I basically just flew all over the country to New York, California, Nashville, all the big writing spots. And just, I was put in sessions to write songs, mm-hmm. write, trying to find those singles. You know what I mean? I must've written over 150 songs that year.
I have a question about this process. Sure. Are you told to write like specifically like other songs that are on the charts, or are you given more freedom? Like, what is that like, songwriting for other people?
With some sessions, yeah. But these songwriting sessions were all meant to be for my project. So we were writing.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But a lot of times they'd be like, hey, we're going to put you with this pop EDM guy. We want you to make this type of song. We're looking for this sound. And then other times it's like, just go in there and see what happens. So they're just looking for content and something that was really going to stand out.
Uh-huh.
And the big thing for me and with Kemosabe and RCA was we were just on different wavelengths. Like I said, I was in this John Mayer type of soulful, heartfelt acoustic artist thing. And they wanted me to be like Shawn Mendes or like One Direction. Those are the comparisons that they're bringing. And actually Shawn Mendes was signed right around the same time that I was. And we actually worked with a bunch of the same writers, which is crazy. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have heard my song Spark and When She Cries, but I wrote those with the Shawn Mendes guys.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have, but I will give it a listen.
I feel like I'm sure I have. I feel like I try to stay up with you.
Yeah.
Because you pump out a lot of stuff, but.
You know, I do. Recently. And I really want to pump out more because I have so much material, but these days when it comes to releasing a song, like I just don't want to put something out without the proper like package behind it. You know, the good artwork I need, like, I want it to be visible or else what's the point? You know what I mean? If it doesn't get exposed. So I'm really trying to be selective about what I put out. That being said, I'm sitting on so much good stuff. It's just driving me crazy.
Yeah, I feel like you must have a lot of content. And as a listener, I would love to hear what you got. So
yeah,
I would love to just drop like a 20 song album right now and not give a fuck.
Do it.
But I can't, I got
an investor. It's like a very methodical type of system so that people like actually get the streams and stuff. Yeah.
Like each shot is like, or each song is like a shot, like a bullet. And like, you got to make the most of it when you release that thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I can't just be spraying like wildly and nobody's hearing my stuff, which is a bummer. I wish I could just do that, but it is what it is. But that
whatever
being
works
said,
for you.
I do. Check this out, guys. I got this board here. I don't know if you
can
read it,
but these are the songs that I'm planning to release this year. Hopefully I want to put out at least five.
I love the plan. It's like, there's an intention there and you have like a goal behind your music, I guess.
No,
I don't know what I'm trying to say,
but I'm trying to make some resolutions this new year. I'm trying to be a little bit more organized. I'm a bit of a scatterbrain. And I really
that's like us doing this podcast.
I can't really stay focused. Like, I'll work on a song and I'll get it to a certain point and I'm bored and I'll start something else and I'll get bored of that and I'll start something else and then end up having all these like 50 to 75% done songs. You know what I mean? Like a ton of them. So now I'm trying
to. You got the ideas flowing and then it's like, you know, you got to have options.
Exactly. And I got plenty of options. I just need to tie up these loose ends. So I've got.
Are you going
to
release an album?
Right now, I'm just doing singles just because it's the best way to. Because each single is its own like campaign, you know what I mean? And you can each time. But at a certain point, I'd love to just, like I said, just drop a ton of music like Drake does, you know what I mean? But I'm not Drake. I don't have that type of following yet. Maybe
yeah, the key word is yet.
So when you were with the album, did you feel like they hindered your creativity at all? Like, I feel like if I was told what to create, like what to write, what type of genre to write, I feel like that would kind of irritate me. Were you ever like against it?
Oh my God. I mean, you're hitting it right on the head. Like the conflict between us and the conflict in sound and styles that they wanted and I wanted really kind of created a problem with me and the label. I mean, eventually we settled on some stuff that we were okay with, but I don't think I was ever really able to give them what they really wanted out of me. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because now I'm doing all this electric, fun pop stuff, and that's probably what they wanted me to do back then. But I just wasn't in that mode yet. I wasn't ready to create that type of music yet. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, when you're kind of demanded or forced to do something you're not feeling or you're not ready to do, like creatively, like you have to feel it to really like be passionate about it, I feel. And if they're just like, we need this from you, but you're like, I can't give that to you. But I also love that you didn't conform to what they wanted. And you were really like, it sounds like you were very like vocal about like, no, like, I don't want to do that. I want to do what I want to do. You know what I mean?
For real. I mean, sometimes I think about it and I regret what I did. And other times I'm like, no, I did the right thing and I stayed true to myself. But
exactly.
I do think that what if I just would have done what they wanted me to do, like Sean did, you know, like Shawn Mendes did, where would my career be at this point? I try not to think about that stuff now because I feel like I'm where I should be right now. But, you know,
the comparison game gets really, and I feel like Sean was very young and able to be the mold that they wanted. And I think you had a vision for what, it sounds like you had a vision for what you wanted and you stuck to that. And I think that's more important than, because yeah, Sean's a big name, but maybe he's not doing exactly what he wants. It sounds like he does. Yeah. I don't know, but
I feel like in the future, if you get there, if you get to where you want to be, then you'll be able to appreciate it more. It won't be as like a heavy weight. You know what I mean?
Because you didn't give up who you are to get there.
Yeah, I mean, getting to where I'm at now was a natural progression. I think it had to go this way. I couldn't be making the music I'm making now unless I went through the shit that I went through. So, and you know, Sean, like now he's at a point in his career where he can do whatever he wants. And that must be so good. You know, once you've had a few hits and the label's just kind of like, well, we trust you and you have a huge built-in following now. So just make whatever you want and it's going to be gold. I'd love to be there one day. Actually, I kind of am there, not having a label right now. I can kind of do what I want, but I don't, like I said, I don't have the audience. So we're working on it. We're going to get there.
Have you had any traction with any other labels or anybody else who wants to work with you? Or you?
Not yet. I've been kind of, I think I mentioned earlier, I have an investor, but they're kind of functioning as a independent record label for me right now. Like they're able to help pay for my gear, mixing and mastering, producers and marketing and all that kind of stuff, music videos. So I have a record label situation right now.
Yeah.
But as you guys know, things are weird without touring and it's just a totally
Because that's a big money maker too, right?
Oh, for sure. In fact, that's where most of the money's made for artists these days.
Mm-hmm. Is touring. When was the last time you played a show?
Oh my God. So long ago. Probably like 3 years ago, probably. I mean, if you don't count Instagram Live, then I did a virtual show, I think in October with my roommate, but I only did like songs. So
yeah,
really show. It's more,
but actually like playing a live show.
Yeah. It's been,
was that the tour with Philip Phillips or was that a different?
No, that I did a few more after that. But my last tour was this hotel tour that I did with the Loft Hotels, where I basically just flew out to do one-off shows. It was really fun. It was an acoustic type show. I brought a couple, but that was the last like time I've done some real shows, and I definitely miss it. I miss the crowd interaction and just the exhilaration and the energy and the feeling of being up there. Nothing compares, you know? So I can't wait.
Well, when shows become a thing again, you have to come back to Ohio.
I definitely will.
Well, and Colorado, cause that's where I am.
Moved. Colorado too.
Denver was one of my favorite shows on that tour as well.
I wasn't here yet, but I'm here now.
Hey, rude time. We were at the Cleveland show. Hello. Read your audience here, Christian.
One of my favorites. All right, now.
Well, that was where we found out who you were, so we were really excited. I like last minute was like, Meg, we got to go to the show. I forced her to come with me, and yeah, we found you and we're forever grateful.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. That was a really good learning experience for me, touring with Phil, that guy.
Was that your first tour or had you toured before?
That was my first like big tour, like full band big tour. I'd done like a high school tour before West Coast.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that was my first big one, like full production one.
What was that like? Was it like super scary or like, were you kind of like, am I really doing this right now? Or like, what were you feeling throughout it all?
It was, I came into it really confident, feeling really good. But okay, so story here. I had my band all rehearsed. I was ready to go on the road. And like 2 weeks out from when I was leaving, I was playing some pickup basketball at the gym. And I caught an elbow from a guy right in my Adam's apple. And it literally destroyed my voice. Like, and I was about to go out on tour. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I was seeing all these different like vocal specialists and doctors, even like on tour, like in New York, just trying to get my voice back to where it was. I had to pitch all my songs down like a couple keys so that I wasn't even singing my songs in the right keys just for like first 4 or 5 shows. So for me, that was a mental test for me for sure. And getting through that, after I was able to conquer that, the rest of the tour felt fantastic. But
you started out like with that hurdle and then it could only go up from there.
Exactly. Yeah. And then my voice kind of came back slowly and I was confident and I felt, you know, comfortable with my set and my band. And it's weird. Like, I'm sure you've probably heard some guys say this before, but musicians, like when it comes to big shows and like huge crowds, that's not as scary as like 5 people sitting in front of you, you know, with their eyes just
trained. I guess that's true. Yeah. Cause you can see them looking at you.
Yeah. Yeah. So at a certain point on that tour, it just became fun. It wasn't scary anymore. It was,
hey, no bark.
I got
my dog. Oh my gosh, your dog.
Look at the dog. Is that your dog or your roommate's dog?
This is mine.
Oh my gosh. Stop. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What's its name?
Her name is Dakota. And she's actually one of two of my dogs. She's the daughter of my other dog.
Oh my gosh.
One up here to LA. So
she you said Dakota?
Dakota, yeah.
Oh, so cute. I never used to be a dog person. And then I lived with 3 dogs. Now I just am obsessed.
Oh my gosh. Dogs are a gift to the world.
My sisters were kind of like, they were the ones that were like, they picked the dog names. They like were super all about the dogs. And I was like, okay, I guess they can have that. And then now I'm like obsessed with dogs.
I feel like if you spend time with dogs and you don't like dogs, then you're probably like a sociopath. Like there's probably something wrong.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, who doesn't like dogs?
Right. I think I just like, they got all the love from the dogs and I was just like, okay, like, I guess I like the dog, but you guys are pawning over the dogs. And I was like, okay, you can have it. I don't know.
And it's also different when you get your own too. And then they give you all the attention and the cuddles and then they become hooked, you know? So
I can't wait to have my own. So
definitely. I'd recommend Pomeranians because they are the best.
I recommend pit bulls because they are the best.
I really want my girlfriend wants a husky and I want an Australian shepherd, so we're gonna try to find one that's a mix, but who knows, that might be a little difficult.
All right, well, kind of getting back on track, since the whole label thing didn't work out, do you find yourself being more cautious with who you choose to work with creatively?
Creatively, no, I don't think so. If there's a contract involved, then definitely yes. I'm much more conscious. But creatively, no, I'm more open than I've ever been. And all that experience with those writing trips really opened me up. Like, maybe you guys can't tell now, but I've always been a really shy kid growing up, and being put in those writing sessions was intimidating at first. You know what I mean?
It's
and share, like, so when you're writing a song, like, you try all sorts of dumb ideas, you know what I mean? And most of them aren't going to hit, and you have to be willing to just sound stupid and try weird things in front of other people that you don't know. And at first that was just super frightening to me, but has made me just like chill with it now. Yeah.
Grow. Well, That's good. It like forced you out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Exactly.
Where you like kind of learned how to just be like, all right with whatever happens.
Yeah. It's just like, this is me, and you know, you either like it or you don't. Like,
whatever happens, happens.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, that's our life motto.
It is.
And apologies, I'm really good at getting off topic and sidetracking, so just feel free to steer me back on.
I feel like we love just having a conversation,
seeing where it goes and having
we're not very structured over here.
That's kind of podcast like
Yeah,
well, that's good.
Well, we hope to make people laugh, so that's the goal. but also have serious combos. Anyways, I did want to ask you about, I was going back in your tweet archives trying to find, I remember when the whole label thing happened, you had like a slew of tweets and I was like, ooh, what's happening here? But I saw this one and I found it very intriguing. You had like the thumbs down emoji and you said, to the music industry, when did music become a popularity contest? When did it stop being about the sounds and more about the looks? And I feel like I just love that you said that because I feel like a lot of artists are swept under the radar because either, yeah, they're like good looking and they can like market that, but they don't have a very good voice. Like I like a more like a artist who can do it all, like write, play their own instruments and sing and do their own vocals rather than having them edited or I don't really know, auto-tuned or whatnot.
Not only so that, I feel like it's so cookie cutter. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like everybody's so similar. And the people that are different are don't get the streams, which is annoying because the radio plays the same 8 songs.
You guys are right on with all that stuff. I mean, I remember that tweet now, and I was obviously feeling some serious salt at that point. At that point, I think I had been in the machine. I've been on the conveyor belt, and I've seen the process firsthand. And I've seen them try to shape me with that same process, and I was just jaded about it. I was just salty about how things were going and the lack of control I had in my career. Mm-hmm. And that was just an unfortunate venting type tweet that slipped under the radar. So
I don't think it's unfortunate though. I think you were speaking the truth.
Cause I do think that happens a lot. Like it's all about, I feel like a lot of the times it's all about money and who can make them the most money, when I really appreciate when it's more about the music and about, you know, making people feel good and having a good song that people can relate to and also a good voice behind it, not necessarily something that's going to like hit on the radio.
Agreed. It, speaking of hits, have you guys ever heard the phrase, hit songs aren't created, they're marketed?
Yeah.
Ooh, I love that.
And it makes so much sense because
a lot of the times I hear a song and I'm like, oh, I don't really like what? Why is this a good song? But then it becomes popular because again, it's marketed.
But then you hear it six,
over
seven
and
times,
over and over,
and then all of a sudden it's starting to sound kind of catchy. And you're like, oh, I guess this isn't bad. And then
that's like Jason Derulo's what's his TikTok dance song? Savage Love.
He's got so many at this point.
Oh yeah,
Savage Love, but I feel like it's not really a good song. Like Jason has a good voice, like he's like, you know, came from an opera background, but I'm like, this song is like really not good. It's just good because it became a TikTok dance. Like I don't get it.
TikTok is kind of crazy now too, how much influence it has on like blowing up songs. It's kind of like the new place to blow up, you know what I mean?
Have you heard new song, that Driver's License?
I've seen people talk about it,
it's
and
like
I'm,
all over the place. It's about this like Disney girl.
I don't get it.
Apparently she and one of her co-stars like had a relationship and then he ended it and is now with another girl and she like got her driver's license.
I looked her up and I guess she was in High School Musical.
Huh. Okay.
I couldn't tell you. I
don't know.
I need to go check it out afterwards.
Okay. You'll have to let us know what you think because I don't understand the hype, but I've seen people hype it up. And so I'm just very confused.
Taylor Swift stands behind it. So...
Of course.
Is she like, so is this considered like a TikTok song? Have you heard of like these TikTok stars that started recording songs and stuff? Is that what this is?
I don't know. I think she was on Disney.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she's like 17. I'm pretty sure she was in High School Musical because that's the only other song she has on her Spotify page.
What do you guys think of the track? Do you like it?
I think it takes you back to like when you were 16 and your first love like broke your heart.
Okay,
well, so like listening to it as a 30-year-old, almost 30-year-old, like it's just, I don't know.
So it does make you emote a little bit, feel something, right?
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm easy to like fall into that with music, though. Like if there's an artist. Okay. So I always say like openers. I feel like openers are a perfect example of this because a lot of people didn't come to go see that opener, but they're like pouring their heart out and I'll be like the mom, like, yeah, go for it.
We're the mean girl's mom in the aisles, like doing
it like
with
you're
you.
Doing amazing, sweetie. Like I will, I'll feel it with them.
That's amazing.
I'm trying to find this. There's a guy that made a guy version of that Driver's License song. And I like it a lot better than the original. He also posted it on TikTok. I'm trying to find it, but I'll have to send it to you guys.
While you do that.
What'd you say?
Shoot me the link once you get it.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it.
So while she's doing that, who, Christian, is the most exciting person you've ever worked with that you've been the most excited about?
Most exciting person. That's such a loaded question, because if I say one person, then I'm burning a couple other people, I feel like.
Give us a couple. I mean, like, it's just, it's not like burning other people. It's just, you know, being like, this was
top three.
I would say one of my favorites is the guys I wrote Safe Place to Land with, which was Greg Wattenberg and Derek Furman. And they're really known for writing with the Goo Goo Dolls, OAR.
I love the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, and the Goo Goo Dolls are one of my all-time favorite old school bands. So for me, that was like a dream come true to go there and work with those guys. And, you know, that was I finally came up with a song that I was proud of and really liked and I wanted to push in the forefront. And the label agreed. So, you know, finally something seemed like it was going in the right direction with the label situation. Yeah. So those guys were fantastic. I also wrote a song with Gavin DeGraw after I toured with him that we never released, but it was really dope.
You toured with him?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't tour with him. We just did a bunch of one-off shows, me, him, and Matt Nathanson. So after that, getting homes, yeah, they're awesome. And
why did I not know about that?
Meg loves Matt.
I think that was like a little bit before my Philip Phillips tour, actually. So it wasn't a tour. It was just a bunch of one-off shows. One of them was like, we did it at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas. Is one of my favorite shows ever because
that place
was a giant like wave pool and everybody stands in the wave pool while you're on
and
stage.
Watches you. Yeah, ooh, that's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
Fun fact, I was a lifeguard at like a place like that for a summer in college.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
No, okay, I have a story, traumatic experience. So I was lifeguarding the wave pool and some guy fake drowned on me, but then some lady came and yelled at me saying I didn't save him, but he was fake drowning, but I didn't know. And then I like cried in the bathroom and then later was told that he was fake drowning and I was like, ugh, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah, that sounds a little traumatizing.
I was like, oh my God. And she like literally like ostracized me and I was like,
wait,
you come up here in lifeguard.
But she didn't know. She didn't know it was fake, though. She thought
it was. No, he was already. Yeah, she thought it was real. No, so he was already like out of wherever he was, and
All right.
I came up. She came over later and told me that guy was drowning. Blah, blah. I was like, well, he seems fine. Like, what are you talking about?
You didn't see him fake drowning.
No. No.
Okay,
but then I got yelled at by this other patron. Yeah. I didn't see him fake drowning and then like not doing anything.
Why didn't you go in to save him?
I'm a terrible storyteller.
Should have led with that.
Sorry, yeah. I always forget the details.
I'm pretty bad myself, so it's all good. I understand. All my stories
anyways.
Fragmented and out of order. And
okay, next question. Who would be the person that you would want to collab with the most? Like, who's your dream person that you would want to work with?
You know what? Right now, I've been wanting to do a duet with a girl singer. Like, I haven't done one in a while since, like, Whiskey and Wine.
With Katie, right?
Yeah, and I'd love to do, like, another one because those are so fun. And, like, harmonizing with the girl, like, I kind of already have a lower register voice, so it's easy to sing with girls. And, God, I'm such a big fan of Halsey. Like, if that ever happens someday. Like,
ooh, that would be cool.
Her voice is, like, my favorite female voice right now. So, Halsey, if you hear this podcast,
Love if Halsey listened.
Hey, Halsey listen, that'd be great.
Our voices would sound dope together. So, there's
that. I think that would be cool. I don't know why I'm thinking of it, but so we like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Time Flies, but we were like followed them for a while and they did a collab with Kira Kosarin, which I feel like.
But she popped in my mind too.
Yeah. I feel like you guys would sound very good together.
Ah, okay. I'll have to check her out. I haven't heard of her.
I think she was also on Disney or something. Like, she's an actress, but she also sings and she does live in LA. So you probably could, you know, link up.
Yeah, get that going. have you guys heard of, her name's Sasha Sloan?
No.
Oh my God. Check her out. She's like my new, like, I'm so
into
her.
Yeah, I gotta write down now.
Yeah, she's.
Okay, well, we have a segment at the end. Maybe that called Artist of the Week. Maybe that can be your plug.
Sure.
But we'll get there, you know?
Sure.
Okay, so Christian, do you have a favorite lyric that you've written, or maybe not that you've written, but from another artist? Like, is there a lyric that stands out to you?
Off the top of my head.
No, it's hard.
I wrote this lyric. Have you guys heard my song Lex Luthor?
Yeah.
Yes.
Duh.
So there's a lyric at the very, like the last verse before the last chorus, it's like, what is it again?
It's, come on, it's, don't be like Justin Bieber and forget your words.
I'm so bad right now. Like if you guys saw my desktop, no, there's just like pages, documents open everywhere. It's lyrics all over the place. Like it's terrible. It's a video game reference to like Mario, and it talks about drop me in the lava, pull a lever. She was only in the dungeon for the treasure. And I just love that. It just tags back to like video games and stuff. And I was a huge nerd growing up, so I had to slide that one in there when I had the chance.
Yeah, you got to spin the nostalgia for you.
And it was just satisfying, you know? So me, that's the first thing that comes to my head. But I mean, I have a bunch of parts, and there's parts in every song that I write that I obviously love. I mean, or I loved at one point. So, you know, catch me on a different, I have a different answer.
While we're talking about lyrics, Meg and I are very different when we listen to a song. When you first listen to a song, do you listen to the beat first or do you listen to the lyrics? Like, what do you connect with most?
I'm more so just like I don't fully take in lyrics on the first listen ever. Like I usually never fully get them all. It's more like I'm like a vibe guy. Like
me too. Yeah.
There might be certain words that stand out and the overall like cadence of the song and feeling of the song. Like if that vibe hits me right away, then I'm in it. And then even later, if I find out the lyrics aren't as cool as I maybe thought they were, I'm still in it because just the vibe.
You like the vibe.
See, yeah. I'm the opposite. Like I have to be able to stand behind the song. Like if it's trash, like if the lyrics mean nothing,
talking lyrically,
and it's not,
You're talking, you have to be able to stand behind it.
Yeah, like I have to, like, I listen to the lyrics first.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's cool. Like where we're the biggest difference, but. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, you
know,
I'm like that as a listener, but as a writer, I'm very like, I have to have I have to have a message and a story. And I want to create a lot of visual things to bring in, you know, I want it to be, I want it to be a roller coaster ride with all sorts of turns and ups and downs. And just, I want to take my listener on a ride. And
do you have like a specific message that you want to like give across to your fans when you're writing, or is it kind of just song by song?
It's song by song. And lately, like I start with music first nowadays. Like I just try to find like some chords or like some type, I create a beat that really resonates with me. And then I go from there, whatever that beat feels like, usually the message or the content comes after that. You know what I mean? So that's
so interesting to hear. Like, I mean, I don't ever write songs. I actually did write a song when I was like 8, maybe.
What?
I don't know. I don't even remember what it was, but I don't know what that's like. So it's interesting to hear like your process about how you go about.
Yeah. I mean, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, I used to be a guitar guy first, but now I'm way down the rabbit hole in producer land at this point, and there's no going back. I feel like, actually I take that back. I always tell myself that someday when I get older, I'm going to be like a folk singer with a guitar and just,
I would be into that.
I feel like you could crush the folk game. You'll have to go to Asheville, North Carolina. It's all the folky like live music.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just want to be like an old gray-haired dude with like a bucket hat, just freaking shredding it up, you know, someday.
Yes.
But right now I'm gonna run this pop game for a little while and see what happens. But
I like it. Do you feel like your sound is different from when you were on the label to now? I feel like it is, but what would you say about
Definitely. I mean, when I hear my old stuff, like my voice just doesn't even sound the same anymore. Like,
it's like a different person.
Yeah. It just keeps changing. It just keeps changing as I get older. And there's obviously things that I keep from back then, but I keep adding more tricks and, you know, more textures and tones and different things as I write and progress. So yeah, it's a constant evolution for me.
As a listener, I can appreciate that you didn't pigeonhole yourself, that it's constantly changing and that you're not stagnant. So like, I feel like from a listener standpoint, that's really awesome.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, you know, what happened to me, I'll tell you, like when I did all that writing on the label, I wrote so many songs, like acoustic songs and like acoustic rock pop songs, that I felt like I'd almost written every type of song that I can write on the guitar. Like I felt like I was like hitting my head on the ceiling of what I could do on guitar.
Yeah.
And I felt like everything I was doing didn't feel original anymore. And that's what made me like stop for a while. I just felt like burnt out. And when I came back, coming back with a whole different sound and medium made me feel inspired and made the world feel open and new again. And I was able to just kind of launch again. Like it felt like a new project. And I actually thought about naming this project something different. It just felt like a whole different entity.
Yeah. I remember, what was the first single you released coming back from your break. Was it Pineapple Rum?
Throwback, actually.
Throwback. Okay. Yeah. I remember when you dropped that, I was like, ooh, I was like, this is different. I like
it's
it.
Different.
Wait a second. Is this the same guy?
Well, because I knew, like, I was like, I haven't heard from him in a while. And then I remember that coming out and I was like, ooh, okay, I'm into this.
Awesome.
Well, speaking of, like, I would describe your music a certain way, but I'm intrigued to hear what you describe your genre, your music, not even in a box, but what would you say your music sounds like, or what would you put?
Oh man, that's such a tough question. The best way that I can explain it is like my vocal style and my melody style is still reminiscent of the pop acoustic stuff that I used to do. Like I can't, that's always going to be there. So mm-hmm. I've definitely revolutionized like the sonic portions of my songs, like the music and the beats and stuff. I've adapted and pushed the limits there, but my mm-hmm. melodies and my lyrics and my songwriting is still, it's like a combination of like Post Malone stuff with like John Mayer almost, like, and Justin Bieber, like all in there. You know what I mean? It's like this weird mesh of sounds. That's the best way I can explain it.
Well, I would say like your music now, I describe it as like pop sultry. It has like a sultry vibe is what I get. But I didn't want to put that label on you because I hate when people are miscategorized, or I don't want you to feel I'm putting you in a box.
Oh, no. Yeah. You guys can box me up as much as you like. I take no offense. But like sultry, soulful, that makes sense because like ever since I did the throwback song, I've been really like into like jazzy chords and jazzy mm-hmm. melodies. Like everything has like this weird jazzy feel to it to some degree. And I love it because with using these interesting chords, there's so many different notes that I can sing now. And the mm-hmm. melody, like the creativity with the melody is just wide open now. So I've been loving it and it actually fits my tone and style kind of. So it's been good.
You can just tell that you're having like a good time with it. Just hearing you talk about it, you're just like living your best life.
Totally, man. And then, like I said, being here in LA, it's hot out. The girls are beautiful. There's all sorts of
musicians. Oh, the girls
everywhere. It's the perfect place right now for me. So, yeah, definitely living my best life.
Yeah,
it's the dream, man. Do you have a favorite concert memory, either performing or attending?
Yeah, I got to see John Mayer in Portland at the Rose Garden, and it was fucking mind blowing. He's the GOAT for sure in my mind. Always will be. Probably the best show I've ever seen.
I saw clips of like one of his shows, and I feel like he has really good transitions, which I really appreciate from an artist. Is that true? Like, does he have good transitions?
Oh, yeah. Transitions are great. But with John, it's more just like, it's his mechanical.
He likes to rock out.
Like his ability to, I was always obsessed with him as a guitar player singer because the parts that he's able to play while singing at the same time is just insane. Like, I don't understand how a brain could process these different things that are so complicated and require so much focus and then execute it at the same time. And it's incredible. Like growing up listening to him and like my first record deal, I was trying to do stuff that pushed the limits in that regard because I was just a fan of him. So the most interesting towards John, he's the guy. So
I think he's amazing too. Like, I love his music, but I saw him in Nashville when I lived there before I moved to Colorado, and I like a good like hype dance song, and I feel like I didn't get that from him. So and he does a lot of instrumentals, I guess.
He goes way too jam session. Yeah.
And I, as a non-musician who does not play an instrument, I don't understand that. So I can't appreciate it. So I think I just was lacking in that understanding because I was like, I just want to dance, but I can't really dance this. Like, I like to hear him sing and stuff. And he didn't play Daughters, which I was like, upset about.
How dare you, John?
And it was like a 2-hour set. And I was like, you didn't play Daughters. I do think he's a great musician. I just, that show, the one time I saw him, I was like, eh.
I can totally see that disconnect. Like the whole jam bandy thing is definitely like a musician geek type of thing for sure.
All right, guys, this concludes part one of our interview with Christian Burkhart.
Tune in next Tuesday for part two.